Previously on The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast, the droids got through maybe 15 pages of the Colin Trevorrow, Derek Connolly script Duel of Fates for Episode 9. This week, they continue onward. Will they make it to page 30? We'll find out. This week on The Droids.
Oh! Oh, oh, oh.
Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris Ryan and Sam, I am Mike, and here we are for part two of our discussion of Duel of Fates. How many parts will this go? We really don't know at this point.
Dumbledore! Ron Weasley!
You know, there's a little bit of Harry Potter in the script. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
There's a portion of this script that is very Harry Potter-esque. The astral
plane. Is it where it says Daniel Radcliffe enters?
Yeah, exactly. It literally says Harry Potter enters.
It's the lightsabers akimbo section.
Let's be honest, though. There's a scar on a forehead. There's an astral plane. We're going to get to all of it. It's a little Harry Potter-esque.
Yeah.
So, if you did not
Harry
join
Potter-esque,
us...
Harry Potter-esque, you mean Matrix Revolutions-esque.
Oh, going back.
I'm calling you out, J.K. Rowling.
So, we're going to catch you up. We'll obviously dive back into where we are, but if you've not listened to part one of our Duel of Fates podcast, go back, listen to it. It's a great hour, well worth your time, sets up everything that we're going to talk about as the script and story moves onward here. This is our overall discussion. If you've not read the script before, we're going to try to give you tidbits, but we do recommend that you read the script. Email us, droidspod@gmail.com. We'll let you know where you might be able to find it unofficially. Don't, you know, put that out there in the ether.
It's pronounced tip-yips.
Tip-yips. Be sure to email us, droidspod@gmail.com. And, of course, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, droidspod. Rate and review us on iTunes. If you give us a review on iTunes, good or bad, we'll read it on the pod. That's a droid head promise. So
there it is.
Putting it out there, good or bad, we're reading it on the pod as long as it's mostly PG-13.
If it's a review, we'll read it. Whatever message you want to get out on this medium, you don't need a microphone, you don't need a podcast. We already built the audience. If you got something to say, put it in a review.
It could be a plug. It could be a plug for your podcast.
No
plug
publicity
your podcast.
Is bad.
Plug your podcast. On our podcast.
For free.
Via the review. For free.
Yeah, it's great.
In fact, we'll pay you. No, I'm just kidding.
So we talked through our initial impressions of the script. We talked about our overall thoughts again on that previous episode. Go back, listen to part one of Duel of Fates conversation. But we also set up the arcs of what we see from our main characters. We've got Poe, Rey, and Chewbacca on a mission to find out how to get to Mortis, a vision that Rey saw. She needs to get there to meet Kylo Ren. Kylo is going to search for this ultimate power in the universe to become the most powerful being that's ever existed. We follow him on his journey. And then, of course, Finn and Rose, as well as R2-C3PO and BB-8, are all headed to Coruscant for a mission to shut off or actually find another way to communicate with the rest of the galaxy, as there has been that overall communications disruption from Kylo Ren and the First Order, keeping these different planets from communicating to potentially rise up against the First Order. So that's where we set ourselves up. We have moved on from our opening sequence as we prepare.
Mike, I gotta jump in. I'm sorry. I wasn't sure when we recorded part one, if I heard this right. I definitely don't mean to call you out. You're saying Duel of Fates. I believe it's Duel of the Fates. Am I right?
Is it?
What's the actual title?
Well, I'm going back to page one here. You know, you can call
it just
me
says
out.
Episode
Let's see
nine.
If you're accurate.
Oh wait, Duel of the Fates. Sorry.
Oh,
I had to go to the second page.
I thought I was. I wasn't sure if I was crazy, but I knew that I had abbreviated it DOTF, and I'd always called. I think that song is the track. I wonder if the track. I think the track's called Duel of the Fates. Anyway, look. Everything's cool.
Hey, Mike, do you
cool.
need some Neosporin for this burn?
Mm. Wow. Hey, oh, Sam, I can't wait to hear you on your podcast, The Droid You're Looking For.
What Chris is alluding to is the droid, I have relinquished
Sam's
none of
podcast,
my power.
The droid who alienated all of his friends.
That's
friends, just called C-3PO, a golden
I'm just
story.
Taking one last look at my friends.
There's so many better lines in this script than that one.
Moving on.
So let's get into it. I think the first thing to really talk about is where we find Kylo Ren, which is on Mustafar. I think we touched on this very briefly before we had to end our last episode. Very much like The Rise of Skywalker, Kylo begins his journey on Mustafar. However, this time around, there's a little bit more for him to do. He's not just looking for the Wayfinder. What does he get? Maybe 40 seconds of screen time on Mustafar where he's taking out those individuals on Rise of Skywalker. Here, there's a lot more to it, and we get our only glimpse, and really the only appropriate glimpse, of Emperor Palpatine in a message that was to Darth Vader, so a hologram that is a Sith holocron that Kylo opens and Palpatine addresses Lord Vader and not Kylo Ren, because Emperor Palpatine is still dead.
And even before that confrontation, which I think we can definitely dive into to how that works and what we like about that. And Ryan, I know you're a fan of this use of Palpatine, but even before that,
yes,
we see, you know, we also see the first of, you know, several encounters that Luke's Force Ghost has with Kylo Ren, in fact, making good on his promise to see a round kid from the previous film that, if anyone watched, seemed to be setting up
which is
a lot
exactly
about
what
what's
we
happening.
I think all talked about after The Last Jedi. We're like, oh, we can't wait to see Luke in Kylo's head for this movie where he is continuing to not only egg him on but also educate him and hopefully bring him back to the light, and this does that.
It was perhaps the strongest, in my opinion, the strongest thread left open that I was most excited for. I thought that the way it left and this incredible display of power from Luke, I mean, I think I would have also been more okay with it, you know, with them not continuing on that thread if they hadn't brought Luke back at all.
Right.
If the display of power that he, you know, not only eliminated his physical body, but, you know, prevented him from projecting himself further. I mean, that would have been an even more tragic ending.
Also, this would help for the Last Jedi haters, because they'd be excited because Luke is essentially trolling Kylo Ren.
Exactly.
So they would see themselves in him.
Exactly. They would be the trolls that they want to see in the world. So the script does call for Luke as a voiceover in this scenario. So we're not actually seeing an incarnation of Luke,
which is what I'd prefer.
Yeah. So I think they're giving us the best case scenario. And then I think there's some payoff to that also for the kind of a little bit of fan service that happens later down the line.
They were playing into Mark Hamill's strengths of voice acting.
You know what, though? We do see him in person later. And Ryan,
I
respect that, because the version we saw in Rise of Skywalker, no, I don't want to see that again. But if somehow TLJ Luke was back and Mark Hamill was doing that performance again, yes, full form,
I was
Force Ghost, fine with that.
To not ruin the surprise.
I was being facetious. Facetious.
Oh, there it is.
I think it's, I kind of love how they do this, and also that Luke is speaking to Kylo and Rey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
kind of having well, this... interesting, like they have their own communication network. It's just the three of them.
It also continues to treat like deep down we all want to see the Force Ghost version of these people so bad, and then every time they tease it with like a voiceover, I'm like, come on. Like, so I think it's good to have that kind of tension.
Also, this also treats it the way Force Ghosts kind of canonically have been treated, which is they're a presence who can kind of guide, as opposed to the Rise of Skywalker, where it's literally no difference between him being dead and alive at all.
Yeah.
So this continues out through, and we see more of Luke with Rey, as you mentioned, Kylo Ren, as it goes on. He's part of climactic moments in this movie still.
Is this,
even
now,
in
is this,
film.
Is when he sees the Emperor Palpatine hologram and it's not Vader, is this when his face gets all messed up?
Yes.
So it, like, it basically, like, back, it has, like, a tripwire, essentially.
His face ID didn't match, and then it called up Siri, is basically
so
what happens
here. he's approaching. He enters a tomb, and that's what, you know, Luke actually sort of goads him or taunts him with in a way, or uses it as a teaching moment to say, this is where the dark path leads, an empty tomb.
About Mortis, though. When he's talking about the dark path leads you to an empty tomb, that's about Mortis.
No.
He goes to an altar to find the Sith Holocron and Mustafar. I think they're talking about where the path leads you.
Well, I think it's a little metaphorical.
Okay.
Okay, I mean,
two empty tombs. They don't say two.
Yeah, I think that's where the line is placed, whatever it's referring to. I think that's what the line is, and they go back and forth that Kylo's on this quest to become more powerful than anyone. He, as you said, discovers the Holocron, which they call a Holocron. Can we just talk about that? It's like they right. just call it a Holocron. They don't name it something else.
If you're selling them at Galaxy's Edge, you know, you might want to put them in your main movie that you put out there.
I thought it was really... I really liked the way they, you know, I thought this was an elegant way to have, you know, a nod to the Emperor, that this was a message mm-hmm. intended for Vader in the event of the Emperor's death, which apparently the Emperor knew was a possibility and would, like, not obviously wasn't his preference, but like had a plan. Like, this was all about legacy. This wasn't about, you know, immortality.
Good on Sheev for having his house in order. In the case he died.
Good on Sheev.
Also, in the novelization, they explain, like, what he did to live.
In the novelization of The Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah.
He had a couple of vials of nearly empty chemicals that Kylo Ren recognized from his studying his history lessons of the Clone War era.
Well, beyond that, they say that he projected his consciousness into a backup body as he was falling down the shaft.
Well, C-3PO can kind of do that stuff.
You know, Holocron and Horcruxes are basically the same thing, and the Emperor was doing that throughout, just setting up Holocron Horcruxes.
Well, not in this version.
Back to our script.
I'm dipping my chocolate in my peanut butter. I don't know what's going on.
The message is about... you know, Emperor Palpatine encouraging Vader to seek out his master, Plagueis's master, you know, named Tor Valum on Remnicor. Are they on Remnicor? Oh, God.
No, to go to Remnicor.
The scene takes They're on Mustafar.
On Mustafar, yes.
Right.
Inside
so
of
he
Vader
says, go
chamber.
To Remnicor, find, and as he's delivering this message to find Tor Valum and learn the ways of, you know, the ultimate, you know, Sith, the mm-hmm. ultimate power, the Holocron then scans to make sure, like, cool, we're talking to Vader, right? And then, like, stops them. It's really cool. The message, like, fritzes out, and then it fries his noggin a little bit.
It kind of, it sets him off course a little bit with his fried dome, which is... This, actually, when we were talking about different passes of dialogue, this was one that I was like, this needs another pass. When Kylo says, Musta close, but so Musta far. And I thought, like, all right, that's a little...
It's a little on the nose, honestly, for Kylo, but...
Yeah, it was a little silly for the moment.
And a lot of that's in how he brings it to the stage. It says that, I'm not reading the script, allegedly. It says that... So Luke does say, this is where your path leads, an empty tomb. And then it goes on to say, the Holocron's blue light swirls red, emits a laser, scans Kylo's body. But then we have raw purple veins streak through his skin.
Yeah.
I'm getting a real, you know, Tommy Lee Jones, Batman Forever vibe.
Yeah.
You know, this is a makeup artist's dream. Right.
It's weird to me that it's scanned.
Also, everyone,
after
do a shot if you're
the
playing
message.
The droids drinking game for a Batman reference. That's
there you go.
First.
It's in there. It's in there.
It is strange that it scans him after it gives him the message.
Well, I like that they kind of worked around it, like implying there was more to the message, right? Like they kind of imply that there was much more to be. Perhaps a warning about what he'd find. You know,
I have a feeling that he used his cut and paste feature. A final draft. He probably wrote the scene. He's like, wait a second. Why wouldn't it have scanned him first? It scans him after.
All right, page 17.
Wow.
That was wild.
Were we all contemplating Kylo's purple streaks. I hope it's like purple streaks in his hair too.
Listen, I've been contemplating Kylo's purple streaks for years.
Oh boy. Well, for those of you who can't tell.
What?
Unbearable pain.
For those of you who can't tell, episode one, part one was in person. This one, not so much. And we're working on that. Anyway, we move forward, and a little bit of Leia story. I think the one thing we didn't talk a little bit about with Leia in this instance, she's not going on her own adventure, her own quest. She's mostly on the bridge of the Star Destroyer Eclipse, which they had stolen from the First Order, still getting everyone in a position to go off and do what they need to do, and then also coming back around in moments that are important for them to change the tide of the course of the war.
I thought this was a great plot point that they steal the dreadnought, and then when they land, Leia brings up you haven't checked this could be tracked, there could be people on board, and then the Empire or the First Order shows up and they need to get on no matter what, so they kind of just load in and take off.
Yeah, this whole sequence I thought was really great. I mean, I think, first of all, the idea that we have General Leia ultimately in this movie, serving from the bridge of, a First Order Dreadnought class Star Destroyer is, it's awesome imagery, and it's something we haven't seen. I guess when they, the Endor mission, they use, an Imperial shuttlecraft.
It's a heightened version.
This is full-on war. This is your last-ditch effort.
And it's also kind of full circle with the Star Destroyer, because isn't this what the Republic Army uses against the... in Clone Wars, against the Resistance Army?
Against the droid
army? Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely...
So it's kind of they've gone back into their, where they started from.
I mean, they're definitely pirates, right? Which is, in line with kind of one of the great things about the Resistance heroes, is they've always kind of been pirates. They're scuttling what they can find, or they're scuttling lost ships, I guess, and they're scavenging what they can find. But in this scene, we see we see some of the tolls of war. Lieutenant Connix is I believe they describe having,
She's got some
scars. Injury or something, got a scar. It's we're seeing the characters from this new trilogy, display, the emblems of war. It's interesting.
I was absolutely offended that they didn't spend 15 minutes minimum on a memorial for Admiral Akbar.
Yeah. Well, in the ship,
we'll get to some fan service moments. They're
in the ship, they actually mentioned the newly christened Admiral Snack Bar.
Of my cat to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Well, an important discovery that Finn makes while they're on the Eclipse Dreadnought is that they have pretty much a whole litany of walkers, ships, assault vehicles, enough to take on the First Order in the First Order capital of Coruscant. And that plays a large part of the story going forward. But that moment that they find on the Dreadnought is what kind of gives them that jolt of hope. All right, well, if we can get to the next step of this, if we can communicate with everyone, we've got all the tools we need. When we last left everyone in The Last Jedi, it was, we have everything we need right here. It was about 9 people on the Millennium Falcon. Now they've got a Dreadnought and what seems like countless vehicles and weaponry. And so they actually can take them on.
I don't know
if you heard. It's a fleet killer.
they kind of front load that.
I love the that interaction. You kind of hit on it earlier, but Ryan, you were saying when Leia comes, first comes on and she's asking, did you guys check this? This could be tracked, and obviously that leads to what happens to the rebel or the resistance base here. But there's also that scene to me felt very Star Wars. It felt very sequel trilogy. I don't think there's any moments of truly great final dialogue in it yet, but there's clearly the hints of the first part of that though, where she's confronting Finn and Poe about their recklessness, and it's their sort of defensiveness of this was all part of the plan. Sure. That felt very Star Wars. And then there is some good dialogue
I didn't know if you were talking generally about the entire script or just the scene.
I was just talking about the scene, but I was talking about the first part of the scene and But then I'm remembering this is where you get a great line from the First Order troopers. I think Ryan, you texted it and pointed it out. I don't know who wants to take it. It's pretty good.
I think Ryan's got to take it.
Where is it? This was weeks ago.
Okay, it's where the First Order officer says, you know, you'll be held or whatever it is. You'll pay the penalty. You'll be held
the
in contempt.
The punishment for your act of rebellion will be swift.
Go on.
And Poe says,
"Is it a
put it on my tab? It's put it on my tab. That's what we're getting.
Put it on my tab. I think is great.
You could hear Oscar Isaac saying it.
Yep.
I think that one's great.
As he's like walking off screen, it's like right before a whip pan.
And somebody says like, what do we do with them? And Leia's like, feed them. They look thin or something. And that what a great Carrie Fisher line.
I got goosebumps when I read that because it's such like a just like." Mercy for the enemy, like
also playing, you know, it's setting up the Finn connection that these are people who were stolen from their families and they deserve sympathy.
Yeah, exactly. It I think another just detail in here is Rose kind of like now just like all in the war. She's taken off ID bars from collecting ID bars from First Order officers.
Love that note about her. Yeah. And again, and this is, I think it's all clear, a lot of this is basic screenwriting. We know, but in contrast to what we've recently seen, it seems like basic screenwriting has been thrown out the window.
Right.
But that, what seems like a throwaway moment that is just kind of a characterization of who she is now that builds out who she's become within the war, pays dividends later in the script.
And
which
it's such a
awesome.
Yeah, it's such a small detail. And I think I kind of like, it's like heightening of her character. Like she's in this because they killed her sister. Like she's doing what she can possibly do to take them down.
Well, ostensibly too, there's something interesting. And I mean, I don't think this script really explores this. I agree, Mike, it does pay dividends and it's really, really rewarding. You know, I found something interesting in the idea that like, this is, you know, Rose who, you know, treasured the half necklace, you know, that she had still to remember her sister. That was, you know, that's an emblem for her. She's also the one who shows the resistance ring, also going to come back, but the fact that she would take the emblems of the First Order, there's something going on in terms of like sort of like emblems, logos, your you know, medallion, your hardware, you know, that she's always interacting with that was interesting.
So we get to Rey, and this is setting up the real story for Finn and Rose as they make their mission to the Jedi Temple. But it's great because it's a callback to what we saw at the end of The Last Jedi, where despite Luke trying to burn down the tree and burn all the books, Yoda saying Rey has everything that she needs, well, she ended up actually having the texts. She had the Jedi texts with her. And so she goes to reference one of the Jedi texts from Octo, and this is where she finds out about the Old Republic communication system that the Jedi had that could be something that could surpass what is the communications blockade from the First Order, and it sets up the entire arc of what Finn and Rose have to do.
Very interesting that that's in the Jedi text.
It is, because you would think
like
they would have been way older.
If you look at it as like a religious text, it's like if the Bible had something about like the the sewer system. And
yeah, I mean, I think it's this like kind of, it's still, we're still taking place in a sci-fi setting, so I think there still is like this kind of connection to technology, like that it is kind of enveloped their every world.
Also, I mean, I'm being facetious again. Sure. It's like it is that like the Jedi existed in an advanced time,
Ryan,
even though it's like an
living
old
document.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, their swords are like computer swords, so like they have to build them.
It's a living document. There
yeah,
were a lot of books
wrote
there.
It in at
that
the
was,
end.
That was in know? That was in the New Testament of the Jedi.
Maybe someone, wrote it in at the end, right before they wrote. It truly was an old republic.
right, exactly. This was more in the High Republic documents. This was.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah,
we'll see.
It was luminous.
Worth noting here was moving along. Finn and Rey have a nice little conversation where they're kind of pumping each other up, and Rey's kind of like, I wake up screaming every night, which is very scary.
But then,
by the way, a line like that always works.
Yeah, it's
like great character building. I know it's like a shortcut. It's a little tropey, but it always works.
Just dip the music to a minor key, and here, like, then you're all set. And then she kind of explains there's a connection between her and Finn, and I think that's kind of hinting at the Force powers.
Or no, also, she's also talking about the connection between her and Kylo Ren.
Yeah, exactly.
Which she says still remains, and Finn is like, you have to sever the ties. He's evil, and she responds that no, you actually taught me. No one's kind of the idea of no one's ever really gone. They can be can be redeemed, which was something she saw in Finn as a former trooper. Which is, again, they're actually following on the story that came before, which I think is why even in its current form this script is so much more gratifying.
Also, speaking to that about continuing on and, like, you know, her journey, that what I thought was really interesting about this and continuing on with The Last Jedi in a literal way is that her relationship with Luke is really tense, because in The Last Jedi they never resolve anything. In The Rise of Skywalker she does that whole thing like, I'll earn your brother's lightsaber, and like, you know, she sees him and she's like, what am I supposed to do? You, like, as if he was a mentor. She leaves him angry in The Last Jedi, and they never resolve that. They don't see each other again. So she would conceivably still be angry.
Well, and she doesn't really witness the moment on Crait when he does go out to face all of the different walkers. That's not something she is a part of.
And also, I'm sure she'd have a little resentment where she'd be like, he could have done so much before.
Well, and it does come up. I mean, she kind of reflects back some of what, you know, Luke in The Last Jedi talks about, the way the Jedi Order failed, and, you know, the fact that, you know, it was the Jedi's own hubris that led to the rise of the dark side, and the corruption of his father. And she kind of throws it back at him, you know, in some of her interactions with Force Ghost Luke, that it's like, you're always talking about, she says something about balance and the fact that it's never actually balanced. It's just always swinging to one side or the other.
Right. The pendulum's always going back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought that was another kind of great moment of dialogue. And again, something that I think, I mean, gosh, I would have to go back to our early, you know, earlier episodes before we knew where, you know, any of this was going, that we talked about, you know, the idea that Rey could be a Jedi who existed using the light and the dark side of the Force in harmony, and that would be true balance, as such a interesting direction for the saga to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think just we could keep moving on, but I think in regards to The Last Jedi, like, she's thinks the Force is just moving rocks, right? At the beginning of that journey, and then by the end of the journey, she realizes it's moving rocks, but with purpose, and like, and that's her in the moment kind of experience. And so I think what this script is trying to do is, like you said, she left Luke angry. And I think, and this is her kind of figuring out, all right, well, why am I angry at him? Why am I angry at Kylo? Like, what do I have to do now? So this is her trying to, like, figure out the piece.
That anger also makes her potential turn to the dark side more palpable.
Palpable, you say? You mean palpatinable?
Before we move on, though, from the Finn and Rey conversation, and I know we got to get through this script because we've got a lot to cover. There's a lot in this script that I like where, you know, there's a lot of winking moments in all of the Star Wars sequel trilogy where it's like, we're going to have him say, you know, don't tell me the odds, or, you know, I've got a bad feeling about this. And a lot of the time it's a bad feeling about this, and especially in The Force Awakens, where it just feels like, hey, you're going to get this line, you're going to like it. It makes sense in that moment, but there's not a lot more to it. I feel like there's a little bit of reuse of lines in a little bit different context, which still helps with the rhyming of everything that George was always talking about, except they're used in different ways. And to me, in this Rey and Finn scene, Rey says, I can't be who they need me to be, versus what Luke says in The Last Jedi to Yoda is, I can't be who she needs me to be. And the fact that that's kind of passed on to her, despite her not obviously witnessing that moment between Luke and Yoda, I like that there's a continuation and a little bit of a mental callback where I'm like, okay, yes, that does connect. That does remind me that she's on a very similar journey to what Luke was on. And I like that the script does that in multiple instances referencing lines from the entire 40 years of the saga that are done in some ways very overt, very much like that Harrison Ford Han Solo moment in The Force Awakens, but other times much more subtle like this, that you almost have to take a moment and be like, oh yeah, I have heard that before.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's beautifully said, Mike.
It's as if it's leaning into the story they're telling as opposed to running mm-hmm. away from it.
Right.
Yeah.
But so as Luke and Rey have their moment together, again, it's leading more to her about Mortis, her finding out about Mortis. And beneath the temple, there's a power beyond anything the Jedi have ever known. If Kylo reaches that temple, all we fought for will be lost. So it sets up her MacGuffin and reason to move forward. But as all of you have talked about, this is the first time we get her with Luke, and we had Kylo, and this is going to be a continuation throughout the entire movie. But I think that's, really just continues to make me feel like I wish we had these scenes to actually experience because they're done so well.
I love when they're in the dojo on the Resistance base.
Yep.
And Luke is like, your pain is an illusion, and I can just hear her saying, it isn't actually. Like I could hear her line reading of that perfectly.
Well, and is there, I don't know if it's that this moment or later, is it when they're talking about Mortis and she says, oh, but it's a myth. And Luke says, so was I, if you remember, which in two ways references mm-hmm. The Force Awakens, which is when Rey obviously says it. And I think, Ryan, maybe you do the best version of this.
Luke Skywalker, I thought he was a myth.
And
my voice is a little off. I've done that once.
Yeah, no, you're right. So was that. Yep, exactly.
But Luke saying, so was I, if you remember, reminds mm-hmm. me of Obi-Wan mm-hmm. talking to Yoda in Empire, where it's like, oh,
too
he's
old.
Too different.
Too old.
So was I, if you remember.
Exactly. Yeah, just to kind of set the scene there, they just move Rey into a Jedi dojo where she's training. hitting wooden pillars that pop out. I would love to have seen that animated because it would probably be like half mechanical, half wooden with like bars spinning around. I could just picture it in some kind of Jim Henson-esque like prop, which I thought would have been awesome.
And oh, but you got that great scene of her running in the jungle.
With rocks floating around. Yeah,
It's just moving rocks.
But it starts with her wearing a blindfold, which, you know, if you haven't read this script, I guess it's a bit of a spoiler going forward, but that is a bit of foreshadowing that she would wear a blindfold early on in this
which
setup.
I think is also cool because there's like a bit of a Kanan connection to that
yes.
as well.
Well, what, we have Kanan and then also, oh, there was another Jedi who was blind. Oh, I'm not thinking of Jedi. I'm thinking of Rogue One and Chirrut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's kind of this thing where it's like the Force will guide you. It's about faith. Like if you have faith in the Force, then you don't need to see to believe.
I'm one with the Force. The Force is with me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they could have snuck that in there. That would have been so cool.
Luke does the same thing. Yeah.
So we are gearing up. They're like, I feel like we started this part two saying like the teams are about to go on their journeys, and we mm-hmm. still haven't gotten to that point. So they're actually about to go on their journeys. Rey yeah. and Leia have a nice scene where Leia sort of, Leia seems to have in many ways given up on Kylo Ren at this point. Rey not so much, and they have a discussion where, Leia kind of she has some interesting sort of perceptions about Rey, where she sort of says like she kind of hints at this thing we're talking about, where it's like you're not all light, you're not all dark, you're something new, you're something different. Which, I mean, who doesn't want to hear that? Who doesn't want to hear that from Star Wars mom? It's so right. nice. It's the best. It's the best
it
thing.
Is
It'd
very...
be so great. I
love. You mean Star
that
Wars
they,
warrior mom?
I love that they lean into the sort of warrior maternal right mm-hmm. of Leia Organa. It's like all the more heartbreaking that had this film been able to be made, it unfortunately wouldn't have been with Carrie Fisher. This would have been such a a great way to send off the character. But they're getting ready to leave. They have this exchange when there's Death Star alert. The First Order fleet shows up as we already spoiled at some point in the last hour that the First Order did in fact somehow track the dreadnought to the base. Everybody scrambles. Everybody loads up as much as they can. It's a sweat and bullets escape, and not everybody makes it. And so once again, we have this feeling that this is again like Hoth before, like all the other so many other bases. Leia has had to leave. She's had to cut losses. She's had to look at people, you know, being left behind. Powerful images.
Yeah, and kind of in the build up to this departure, we get a little more of Hux. We learn that he's kind of jealous of Kylo Ren. He wants to be force sensitive or use the force. So we see
a
very funny scene where he's kind of he does what we all do. You put the remote on the table and you try to pick it up. We've all done it. He's trying to do it. Cool little detail. We see what I believe is Mace Windu's lightsaber on his mantle. And
he's kind of got, he's a little bit like Grievous, right? He like collects the lightsabers.
Yeah, exactly. And nerd. Then he kind of gets caught in the, did you ever hear of knocking kind of situation when Kylo Ren busts in, sees him.
We could all relate to that.
Yes. Yeah, he tried to seize him dude with the force. And then, we get to see more of their relationship, which I think is good justice for Hux. Everyone loves a good Hux scene. He's a great foil, to kind of the seriousness that Kylo is. He wants to be that evil.
This script again, it continues where we left them, and the humor that we get from Hux is balanced with some drama, and it is balanced with this, like, it is still this weird brotherly competition. And whereas the Rise of Skywalker, I enjoyed the idea of like, oh, what if Hux was a traitor because of how much he hates Kylo Ren? That's a good idea, but it's thrown away. It's barely paid lip service in that film. And he's killed off so kind of quickly and ignominiously that it's wasted. And here, this movie like pokes fun at him with like his striving for force sensitivity, but also there's true menace under that. You know, he believes that, you know, it's kind of revealed that he's more than happy to let Kylo Ren go off tilting at windmills after these, like, you know, Sith legends and artifacts, because he's the one, you kind of get the sense, you know, he's happy. He's running the country. He's running the First Order here, you know? So, without Kylo Ren around. And then whenever Kylo shows up, it's always a reminder that there's a supreme leader there to yank the chain.
Kylo not only shows up, he shows up sporting his new mask.
Well, before we get to that, though, I do want to say, I want to defend my boy Hux a little bit here. Like, we don't know the rules. This isn't actually canon. The script didn't happen. I'm maybe being a bit too logical here.
Sure.
But, like, we get it. You know, obviously, more likely the Force, we hope, is going to respond to the light. But why can't Hux use the Force? Just, he's evil. He should be able to tap into that evil portion of who he is. And as we've learned, the Force is available to everyone, and he's evil enough to tap into the dark side. I feel like he shouldn't be removed from the Force. But it does play better for laughs in the script.
I was going to say, I think the joke works that way.
And it does. I'm just trying to say I want to see Hux have a little bit better way to go out than this.
I don't know. The only way I could see it somehow paying off that it's like if he could only ever move things the same small amount and it always resulted in like something falling over or something like that.
He wants it too much. So that's the thing, is that it's a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, of course.
That's what Qui-Gon Jinn said.
I didn't want to tell you guys this, but I have to reveal it now. I am a Russian bot who was wanted Hux. I was the one going after Rian Johnson during The Last Jedi to make sure that they didn't ruin my precious General Hux.
I knew it.
But Chris, as you said, Kylo does have a helmet in this script as well.
Right.
This time, though, for a real purpose.
A little motivated,
because of the purple veins, the purple lines going through his face, he actually needed some help.
It also serves a little bit of a medical purpose. There's a med droid with him.
They weld it to his face, don't they? Yeah. Or they weld something to his face.
They smelt Beskar to his face.
Oh my god. That's some Man in the Iron Mask, like, gnarly level. Like, they would have had to figure out a way to like kind of not show this, like Spielbergian, like it happens like you're behind a droid or something. And so you don't see it, because like this is gruesome, this is gnarly.
And then he has a mask, and it's described as like his old mask, but scarier.
Yeah, that's like a
that's a real placeholder.
That's a production designer's dream sentence. Like, oh,
it has
okay.
a new sound, different than yeah. Vader's guttural, deep.
I like that yeah. a lot too. I would have.
There
loved
is
to
a
hear
lot of.
The...
If I was to give a note about the writing in this, there is a lot of them saying what things aren't like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to what they are like.
Yeah.
But, you know, who am I?
Hey.
I think, yeah, this is there's also before he, this is like before he departs again for Remnicore, and he actually like kind of disavows his allegiance to Vader, and he actually frees himself of wanting to be Vader, because he now believes he sees what was Vader's weakness, which was love. And so we get the sense that, you know, Ben is going further down the path of, you know, abandoning his humanity in favor of power in the dark side,
mm-hmm.
before he takes off for old Remnicore.
I just want to go back to one line. I know we're trying to move this, keep this boat moving, but I think there's one line that we're all going to like. Luke, when talking to Rey a little bit before that, just kind of says,
is this when they're in the dojo? Are you going back to the dojo
right
now,
I
got
to go back to the dojo.
Are you going back to the dojo?
I think this line is great. Luke says, if that's what you believe, the last Jedi is dead. And then Rey kind of like sits down and says, maybe he is. And so this is where she's like, I'm not a Jedi. She doesn't want to be a Jedi yet.
She doesn't believe she can be a Jedi yet.
I don't want to be a Jedi. I'm not a Jedi.
I'm not a Jedi. Because then there's a later conversation where Poe is calling her Master Jedi. She's like, stop calling me that. I don't like being called that. They have a little back and forth. So I feel like she's kind of like, I haven't accepted this yet.
Yeah, it's almost like she's, oh God, how would I describe it? We're like refusing a call or something. I don't know. Right. I'm sure somebody will write a book on it.
So anyhow, we go all the way through. Now he's on his way to Remnicore, old Remy.
Well, I think we don't need to go scene by scene, because obviously we're going
sure.
to be caught up into this for, you know, an 18-hour podcast.
Okay.
But I think within this, there's a lot more, and I'm not going to go through all the lines, but there's a lot more back and forth between Poe and Rey, where you continue to see a little bit more of the building of the relationship between the two of them, which is crucial mm-hmm. as the story unfolds, but there's a playfulness to it. There's clearly a care, desire kind of going back and forth. And there's Rey not only pushing back against the call to action for her, but also pushing it back against Poe. Poe wants to be there with her. Poe wants to help her. She doesn't want Poe to come along. She's doing this on her own.
Yeah, this is also something that gets explored in that scene between Rey and Leia. This was one of the things that really didn't work for me. I think we got into it, you know, on the last episode that. You know, you guys, it was like something that you didn't need but weren't bothered by.
You mean when
I
jumped across the room and tackled you and said, you're dead wrong?
Yeah, I'm still smarting from that, from that tackle. But, you know, this was like, this didn't work for me kind of ever. And I was pretty confident, though, that this was the kind of thing that over time, you know, Kathleen Kennedy and, you know, everybody involved was going to kind of be like, no, we're not going to have a romance between, you know, Poe and Rey. And it's fine to explore it in a script, you know, a version of the script. It's fine mm-hmm. to explore some
yeah.
flirting. But I think this works much better as a platonic friendship. And she can still be pushing him away. You know,
yeah.
she can still be saying, I don't want you to come along.
They just met not too long ago.
Yeah.
But
so,
I have to jump in and just at least voice the other side. I felt like this worked very well for me. I don't think Kathleen Kennedy would have said this is something to take out, because I thought this resulted in, again, my favorite moment of this entire script, and what probably would have been my favorite moment of the entire film, and maybe one of my favorites of the sequel trilogy, because of what they set up between the two of them. And it's easy for me to envision chemistry between Oscar Isaac and Daisy Ridley.
Sure.
And the two of them can pull that off. And I don't think it takes away from the rest of the story. I will agree that Last Jedi set up much more between Kylo and Rey
that
needed to be explored. But I don't hate this storyline with the two of them in here, because I actually do think that there's a lot of playful banter, and I can see why this would turn into a romance when Finn and Rose are on their own romantic path, even though it's not the main purpose of their story.
Yeah, I still think like the payoff you're describing, which is really great, I think it works without the romance element. I think it works if you do. I think all of it works fine. But
I think
anyway,
you'd have to set up a very deep and emotional platonic relationship, which I don't.
They'd have to both be like on a hot air balloon and that they can't get down. A shared experience. So in these scenes, everyone is gearing up to kind of, they're getting in their ship. So now we're seeing like, how is everybody traveling?
Oh God, we still haven't started on their journey.
I know. It's very good parallel storytelling though. So we see everyone kind of popping in their ships. I think Rose has a great line here where C-3PO is telling her the odds. She kind of turns the thing on her head. Everybody's telling 3PO to shut up, but she goes, great, I love numbers. So
I think that line.
I thought that was a good little call out.
I think that's a neat little thing. That one gets ironed out.
I'm beginning to think that, you know, we're just going to have to kick you off and put you on your own pod.
Tell me the odds, 3PO. I love numbers. It's so close.
We'd have to stick him on an escape pod.
But I think that's entirely something that, with him having always said that, you say that line in a sarcastic way, and it does work. I think you pull it off, because it's not just that we've heard him say it constantly throughout it. The characters have as well. So they'd be very familiar with it also. So it's almost this biting, like, yeah, tell me the odds. I love the numbers. I'm not a good performer, but
I like it.
All right, fine.
I laughed so hard, I spit out my soda.
Chris sat in a movie theater to read this script. He went and he bought a big bucket of cola and popcorn.
I threw my popcorn in the air. So they're all their ships. We get the Falcon. Poe, Rey. Where's Chewie? Chewie in the Falcon? No, Chewie's with...
Well,
he is?
Yeah.
Actually,
they had that fight with the Knights of Ren.
Right.
But we also had that great moment that this is something that comes back throughout the entire course of this script, is Chewie is kind of put in the back seat on the Falcon. And he goes back and forth with Poe and Rey. Poe sits down and he's like, that's my seat. He roars that, but it's said in the script that he's clearly implying that's his seat. Rey then kind of dismisses him and says, this is my ship. And Chewie's losing it because obviously it's his ship. I found that funny, but there's also just the part of me, I'm like, no, it is his ship. And Rey, don't be dismissive of him. Come on. That felt off of the characterization for me.
Well, I mean, Rey did rescue it back from the people that stole it. I think it's hers.
Wow.
There's a long line of stealing the ship.
Ankar Plot, who took it from Duquesne.
Who took it from the Urban Boys?
Yes, exactly. So I think it belongs to hers, Finders Keepers.
Yeah, but then Han Solo and Chewie took it from her.
Yeah, Han Solo and Chewie are losers, weepers. Well.
There it is. All right. They take off.
Okay, this is where the base gets destroyed, everybody makes it out in the nick of time. Leia escapes to go see a friend to see if they can drum up some support. Rose and Finn and 3PO and R2, they escape not too bad of shape, but then Rey and Poe are pursued by the Knife Nine, and this is, I thought, some really cool images, because they escape like just barely. They get off the planet, but the debris from the base, because I think the whole planet gets destroyed or the whatever gets destroyed, and so it's like they're flying through asteroids, but the asteroids have like the actual architecture and stuff we just saw on the surface,
like shards
of things we just saw like in front of them, and I thought it was really cool imagery. They're bobbing and weaving, and like Nine's bobbing and weaving. They got that guy in the tube who's like navigating. It's real cool.
No mention of Claude.
Where is Claude in all of this?
Yeah, I know. It's honestly the one crossover I would not have minded.
Interestingly, probably not on the poster.
So I think let's jump ahead a little bit and really focus here in the last few minutes of this podcast, of part two of our discussion, on what Finn and Rose's journey before the third act of this film is. I think it's pretty easy to cover kind of where they end up with what they're doing because they make their trip to Coruscant. And as they arrive in Coruscant, you get a sense of the lower levels. You get a sense of the class separation among the people of Coruscant and the continuing conversation of what we saw from Canto Bight. Now, some people may not love to hear that that continues. It's not quite the same as Canto Bight, but there's some moments where Rose is talking again about the almost the inefficiencies and the inequality and the way that people have been treated. And there's comments about the ground people, and I love that C-3PO says he just prefers the upper levels of Coruscant, and R2 calls him out as elitist.
It's a great moment.
It's very funny.
But it sets up what is relatively a straightforward mission for them as they make their way in through the Jedi Temple. And I think just to cover this portion before we get into our next episode, does anybody have anything else they felt about their mission and executing, setting up the message through the Old Republic transmission system?
No, I think it's cool. I think it's like one of the best ways to get a callback of the prequel, like kind of dictionary of Star Wars there. I think it's a clever way to have the plot woven into this. I'm sure Ryan agrees with me being back on Coruscant. Like I'm sold immediately. I even like in Jurassic Park when they show like the old park, like I'm in like Lost World stuff. I'm so into that. I love that kind of thing.
That's how you make it something that's ending a saga.
Yeah.
You don't tell us that it's ending a saga. You bring in things from the beginning and have them play in.
Yeah.
And they go to Coruscant. They deal with the Jedi Temple. This new generation is dealing with something from two generations ago. We see that this is a circle and that it is cycling through.
I think there's something really cool also about like just in terms of the way the trilogies were released. This like you had the sort of ever expanding world. And I remember like I remember the first time you see Coruscant in The Phantom Menace. It's so kind of overwhelming. It's so cool.
The
Halcyon
days of old.
They say like the entire planet, you know, is the entire planet is a city, you know, and you see the landing pads and everything, and you see it, you know, more of Coruscant obviously in you know clones and Sith, and the idea that we would be coming back and the way it's so dilapidated, the way it's, you know, fallen since that time, it's, you know, just the way this universe and this, or I guess galaxy, ages over the course of the films is, you know, presented here would be so rich, I think. But like I'm trying to remember the actual details, Mike, because I knew you were asking about the mission. Like, do they really, is there any real delay? I think there's something about, no, the Scomplink thing comes back later, so like,
yeah, that's later.
They kind of have a relatively easy time, and I think the message is of Leia, right? And it's like it's like recalling her original, you know, the first time we see her leaving the message for Obi-Wan Kenobi, and it's kind of cut in sort of a montage of, you know, the various scoundrels and pirates and smugglers around the galaxy and, you know, and resistance fighters everywhere hearing this message of, you know, a much older and stately Leia, you know, once again, you know, pleading for help against the, you know, a great empire.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot that goes wrong for them at this point as they're setting up what they're doing. Obviously, things kind of go sideways as the story goes forward, but they do a little bit of a grappling hook thing and zip line across to get the Jedi Temple. I can't help but think of the beginning of The Dark Knight and just thinking of the two clowns in that part, but it's Finn and Rose this time, and I'm not implying they're clowns. That's not what I'm doing here. But
it reminds me of Naboo and Padme.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Kind of shooting up the side of the Naboo palace.
Yeah.
Yeah, to get back in. But so they have to use a little bit of the info they find within the Jedi Temple as they're looking through old crystals, a Kyber crystal, to help set up and work on the old Republic transmission. And there's the great moment, and I love this part. Sam, I'm guessing you hated it the way this conversation's gone so far.
No,
but Finn,
I like this.
Finn finds one of the crystals, and he throws one over to Rose. She catches it and says, 5,000-year-old Kyber crystal, very rare. You hand it to me.
It's so perfect. It's such a like, if you've ever like worked with somebody from like IT or something, and it's like, because Rose is like kind, she's, you know, she's a mechanic and she's clearly a nerd and she loves the numbers and stuff, and Finn is, you know, the swashbuckling hero. there's ever real, confident. And so there's just such a moment where it's like, just anytime anyone who has any technical knowledge like has looked at you and condescended you and been like, handle it delicately. That's a flat screen TV. It's not a sack of potatoes.
They have there's a real kind of like vaudevillian act going on between them in this scene.
I loved it, Mike. And I'm not just saying that to prove that I'm not the person you think I look, we have our moments, sure, of disagreement, but no, that's a great moment.
You know, usually I'm the one who's bringing the pod down, and this time, anyway. But getting into the message you talked about, I think we should just go, it's very quick, but the message that from Leia, and I don't know if anybody else has it up, they want to read it, might do a better job than I am, but just in the interest of efficiency, I'll dive in. This is General Leia Organa of the Resistance. The time has come to forge a path to freedom. The forces of oppression have ruled our galaxy for too long. We must join together and fight. Send your fastest ships, all your warriors. Our voices will not be silenced. We can no longer live in the shadow of the First Order. We must step into the light. And at that point, I believe her voice might be silenced by another character who has meaning to her. But they put out that message, and it goes, and they show us a number of different planets. This is almost, there's one moment like this later in the film as well, but we see deep space, we see a shipyard, the Mon Calamari, we see Tatooine, we see a Trandoshan Palace, the Bonadon Market. It's, they're starting to show all the galaxy, which goes back to what we talked about in the first episode of this. They're continuing to message this matters beyond what we usually see of just our core characters.
Well, and it's not, you know, it's not like late in the third act of the movie, somebody that, you know, hasn't been a part of this trilogy goes and like off screen rallies everybody. It's like we see the actual rallying cry go out. It's not like the Emperor, it's not like the dead speaks through Fortnite before the movie, or it's not, you know what I mean? It's like we see, like, for a thing to be, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, for a thing to be part of a movie, it has to be in the movie, is, like, my main criteria. You know what I mean? If you're going to, like, call something part of a story, it has to be, like, a part of the story that
we're
given.
Are you talking about, like, the fact that Palpatine was a clone? That was in the movie, right? Oh, there was a moment where it was jokingly talked about, so that counts, doesn't it?
What was it even talked about? I don't remember.
The people who are defending The Rise of Skywalker are saying that Dominic Monaghan said, oh, Sith,
oh, everybody's favorite
cloning
character from the...
This is what was really setting up that he could have been a clone.
Yeah, such a relief that character made it through, man.
You
really.
All, everybody. We needed a lot more of that than conics. Which, by the way, Leia's daughter is actually a fantastic actress. If you've seen Booksmart, I think they needed to do a whole
lot
more with her.
For sure.
I'm glad you brought that up. First off, Booksmart is great. So
it's,
go see
it's
it.
So great.
Good movie.
And Billy Lord is brilliant in it.
That was my favorite part of the movie, was her.
Yeah, she's great.
It just made me think for a second, like, why hasn't she been given more to do in Star Wars?
I just want to be clear. When Ryan says go see it, he means, like, track it down on, like, VOD or rent it or buy
it's
it
on
or something.
Hulu.
Like,
go watch it.
We didn't record this 6 months ago. We haven't been sitting on this.
Sam, this will be very helpful for our lawyers.
I think it's on Hulu. Go watch.
Well, I think that closes out part two of our discussion.
Have you
we're
guys
gonna...
seen this new movie, Million Dollar Baby?
No. Boy, I wonder who's going to win the 2016 election.
We are going to... Actually, this script came out after the 2016 election, right? It was dated December 2016?
Yeah, I think so.
So... Wow. Colin Trevorrow was in a very interesting mental place as well.
You
as
could
Derek
tell
Collins.
It's still filled with hope. They wrote it before, but it came out after.
But so as we alluded to, Leia's voice does get silenced, and we're going to talk about that in part three of our Duel of the Fates. Did I get that right, Sam?
Yeah, that was a little better, Mike.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. We're going to go and backtrack just a little bit, not go through every scene, as again, we're 2 hours in and we've hit page 64, so we're getting somewhere. But we're going to talk a little bit more about what led to Leia's voice being silenced in part three, coming up on the next edition of The Droids. Join us then as we continue onward on Duel of the Fates. What they throw?
Annie?
I used to think it was just podcasting, but now I realize it's podcasting with purpose.
Oh.
I wrote that down when you said it earlier. I've been waiting.
With purpose.